Welcome to episode 297 of Fly Away. We're a group of agents from Outlander Travel who get together every week to talk about all things travel. Whether you've been listening for a while or are just tuning in, we're happy you found us. We truly believe that travel has the power to change the world, and we want to inspire others to come along with us. We chat about destinations, current events, our favorite experiences, and lots more. We'd love to hear your feedback and ideas for topics, so be sure to connect with us on our website, Facebook, or Twitter. My name is George, and this week I'm joined by fellow Outlander travel agents Elizabeth, Sandy, Lindsay, and Donna. Travel helps us develop the taste for the destination. It can inspire us to try new things and often leaves us longing for more. We often fall in love with not just the sights and sounds, but also with the flavors we experience when we travel. Since we are all feeling a bit homesick for the home of our hearts, this week we thought it would be fun to talk about some of the tasty experiences we have loved so much that we have tried or contemplated trying to recreate at home. This week's episode will be an ode to delicious food found around the world, but mostly at Walt Disney World. So let's get started. Disney food.
So we're not only going to talk about Walt Disney World, people.
No, but it was too good of a pun.
I don't know if it's a pun. It's a joke. It's a reference.
Joke.
So for me, when I see things like this, the first thing I think of is not Walt Disney World. It's like those European delicacies that you can get. And the first thing that comes to mind is baguettes. Yes, like bread, like the crusty
real
on the outside.
French crusty bread with the Genoa salami and the butter and those little gherkin pickles that you can find in a sandwich anywhere in France, even in the airport.
Yeah.
And you can find really great frozen ones at Costco.
Are they really good?
And they are really good, and they're really from France.
Wow.
We have them in the freezer right now, and we pull them out and we make them. And the kids absolutely love it, and they'll like put it in their lasagna, they'll put it in their, just put butter on it, they'll put whatever, and yes, it's fantastic.
Okay, I might have to try one of those because I had not tried a frozen version. Finley will go.
Will you bake them in the oven?
Finley, so are they not baked, or is it like frozen bread where you just toast it basically in the oven, warm it up?
It takes about 20 minutes, so it's par baked.
Okay. So yeah, because we've done, at the grocery store, they have baguettes, and they're okay, but it's still like the ingredients aren't right. So it's good, but it's not good. But there are a couple of French bakeries local to us that have really good baguettes. And I feel like that's one of those, like that crusty bread is just hard to find in the U.S. Unless you live in a really big city. You know,
I'm struggling to find good. I found a couple places, but then it sells out so fast because everybody, I think, is looking for it at the same time.
Yep, for sure. So that's my thing. That's my quest. And then the other one is polenta. Mm. I think that if you've ever had polenta in Italy, it's hard to recreate it here, but you can. You can do it.
I've been told that the polenta at Trader Joe's is really good, but I haven't had it yet because every time I've been there, it's been sold out. So that's probably a pretty good indication.
That is a good sign. Yeah.
It's a good sign that it's delicious and I have to track it down. But
the first time I ever had polenta was in Italy, and it was like, it looked like a big cake. It was probably a foot high, like this huge slice, and it was a cheesy polenta. And I thought I would die. And it wasn't until I got home and I realized that it was just a version of grits, which I do not like. Yeah, but it's a different consistency. It's the same ingredients, but it's a different consistency. And yeah, I was like, really? Because I've been disgusted by grits my whole life growing up in the South. And then I fall in love with polenta. But some of it also is things like the wild mushrooms that you can only get in Italy. It's very possible that at the restaurant that you're eating, they have picked those mushrooms in the last day.
So you have the authentic taste of the soil.
Yeah. And that flavor.
And there's nothing like actually homemade pasta, too.
Yes.
That you actually make at home.
That's true.
That's true. And nothing, I mean, I have not as yet been able to recreate something for my travels that's tasted exactly like, but it tends to be enough to get me over that. But it's so weird to have homesickness for something that's not your home. But I feel like travel is such a big, food is such a big part of my travels that it, I'm finding during this pandemic, it's the thing I'm missing the most. I'm missing tasting new things and trying new things. And it's that feeling that connects you with the destination. And so it might not be completely authentic because you might not be able to find your mushrooms, but at least you can get a little, just a little enough to, you know, tide you over until you can go back.
One of the biggest fails I ever had trying to recreate something I had on a trip was this octopus that I had in Fort Lauderdale that was really good, really tender, like great flavor. It was awesome. And I decided I was going to make it at home. And you might have come over that day, Elizabeth, because I tried, I did it like at one of my oyster roasts, but it was, it did not turn out the same and nobody would try it. It was like this boiled mess.
It's really hard. I mean, I've had restaurants, really good restaurants, and even in really good restaurants, it can turn out bad if it's too rubbery.
Yeah.
It's got to be like that perfect consistency of charred crust crunchiness, but yet not burnt and not like, too rubbery. Yeah.
Like melts in your mouth. Yeah. It was really good at this place in Fort Lauderdale. Yeah.
Yeah. That's so funny. So when I came home from, Germany and from Austria this summer, all I wanted to do for like a month, 2 months was just pretend I was still in Bavaria. I was buying there's this Bavarian meats place in a family-owned Bavarian meats place in Seattle, and they make this knackerwurst, and I was buying that, and I was buying like the boar's head sauerkraut, and I was like cooking the sauerkraut just enough to get it heated so it's hot and it gets the flavors going with the knackerwurst, and putting it in a crusty French roll, and I brought my mustard home, and I was having that every day for lunch. And then the pandemic happened and they temporarily shut their meat processing plants. And I haven't known what to do with myself because I've tried every single like sausage or thing to replace that with, and I haven't found one other American made anything that works.
Just to bring out that elephant in the room, I think the best way to recreate something that from your travels at home is to bring it home. So, and you can't always do that, but
I wasn't going to bring an octopus home.
Yeah, no. And that, some of that is cooking. Like that one is how you prepare it. But even we just recently ordered Portillo's from Chicago and ordering the real thing, they make sure you have everything you need. So you have the actual beef gravy and they do not mess around with it. They're like, that thing that's on top, when you, that is spices. Do not throw that away. It's not fat. It is fat, but it's not, you need it. Put it into the pot with everything else. And then this is how you do it. And it comes out tasting delicious. And honestly, I don't know that I could make a Portillo's Italian beef sandwich with all the same ingredients and have it taste as good.
I grew up in Southern Wisconsin by Northern Illinois, and Italian beef is one of the things that like's a staple of learning to make. And the only way I'm going to get one out here, I could make one. And if I had the ingredients, it wouldn't be as good as Portillo's, but it would be pretty damn close because I grew up with it. But I can't get that crusty bread. Like we're talking about the bread. I can't get the crusty bread. I try and go buy a 5 pound rump roast and everybody looks at me in the store like a rump, like it's called something else out here. I don't know. But we order from Taste of Chicago all the time for that very reason. We get the deep dish pizzas and we get the Italian beef sent out, and it's just that little taste of home to tide us over until we can go back. And it's expensive, but it's worth it when you're paying for the experience. I recently did something really crazy. I don't know if you've seen those subscription boxes with the food from all over the world.
Yeah, like try the world or whatever. Yeah. Yes, I did that for a little while.
So I got a Yum, it's called Universal Yums, and I got the big mega box. And because this month's theme was the UK, and I've been craving cheese and onion potato chips so much that I have like a whole bunch of bags saved in my wish list on Amazon. They're like $12, $20 a bag for Walkers. chips from the UK. Next time I go, I'm going to bring home a whole suitcase because I crave them so much, and then I can't find them anywhere here. But in that bag, I mean, I got oyster chips, and there was, and they were so good, and the cheddar and onion and prawn chips. There's like 30 different snacks in there, and it was totally worth the money. I think it was like $30 to get that little taste of travel, to try a bunch of new things and experience them. And Josh has been actually doing it with me, which is kind of neat. I did one, yeah, before, and I didn't like it as much because it didn't have an explanation of what everything was. Whereas this one came with a little booklet that showed you, they told you the history behind why that snack was important in the region, or what was in it, and where the ingredients came from, and all that. It was very neat. It tied it in. But.
Well, for my birthday this year, my husband actually ordered cheese from Amsterdam, from Henry Willig Cheeses.
Oh, he's the best husband.
And the thing is that the shipping, it doesn't matter how much you order, the shipping's like $10.
Oh, wow.
From Amsterdam. And my son bought me some Delirium Tremens beer from Belgium locally, but it bought it here. But that's what I had for my birthday, was Delirium and cheese.
If we could get French cheeses, like real French cheeses imported legally, Finley would be the happiest kid on earth. Yeah. And that, I think that's the hardest part, is some of these things you just can't. You just can't get them. And even, so one of the things in the show notes here, there's a lot of Disney recipes. And I remember the first time I tried to make a Disney recipe at home, and it was for the fettuccine Alfredo with shrimp from the old, like one of the old Italian restaurants that's not there, like the one at Epcot that, and the first thing on the list is 4-count shrimp. And I did not know what that was. I was in my 20s and I went to my dad. I was like, what is 4-count shrimp? He was like, that's impossible. I was like, no, it's not impossible. He's like, 4-count shrimp means it's a 1/4-pound shrimp. We're in North Carolina. You are not going to find a 1/4-pound shrimp. It's the size of your fist. I was like, I've never seen a shrimp that big. I was like, see? He said that. He said, see? So the first time I went to Austin, Texas, I went to Central Market, and they had 4-count shrimp, and I almost lost my mind. I had never seen a shrimp that big in my life. But that was this recipe book from Walt Disney World is like, first you get, you know, 4 4-count shrimp. Well, I can't get those. Like, immediately the recipe is dead for me. I cannot get them here.
I had one. There was like a drink recipe I wanted to recreate, and there was one of the liquors you couldn't buy in North Carolina. Yeah. I can't remember what it was. But yeah, I was like, what the heck is that?
Most of my tiki drinks I want to make, but I think that's another podcast. So the funny thing is like the very first thing I fell in love with at Disney that I had to ask for the recipe for was the Bavarian cream cheesecake. And I don't like cheesecake at all. It's normally too thick for me. I hate it. But the Bavarian cream cheesecake in a beer garden, and actually I think you can get it in a little kiosk, takeaway kiosk too. It has a little layer of sponge cake on the top and the bottom, and it's really light and fluffy, and it's just the most melt in your mouth. Well, one of the ingredients on there, they sent me in the mail the recipe card, and I was like in tears the day it came in the mail, and it has house cheese. Well, where the hell am I going to get house cheese? I mean, if I still lived in Wisconsin, I could get all those cheeses really easy. But I live in the Pacific Northwest. I'm going to have to import cheese to make a very green cheesecake. And then I did it with a couple other, like, there was a really great mushroom tomato fennel dish that they stopped making. And they sent me the, so anything, that's kind of neat to note, anything at Disney that you want, they'll send you a recipe. They'll either go get a card and print a recipe card for you for most things, or they'll send it to you in the mail. And I always thought, yeah, right, they're just placating me. They're like, crazy lady, go, we'll mail it to you. But they do, they mail it to you.
Yeah, they will. And I think that's important. Actually, anywhere you travel, you can ask for the recipe, because that, we saw that. And I don't know if you saw this on Avalon, but when we were on an Avalon cruise, somebody asked for a recipe for something, and I don't even remember what it was, but I witnessed the chef come up in the middle of the day and say, you asked for this recipe. Yes, it was me. And he handed them the recipe card, but then he talked through it. He said, well, you're probably going to have trouble. And they were Australian. So he was like, I'm not sure you're going to be able to get this in Australia, but you know, you could probably substitute this or this. And they're like, oh yeah, we know what that is. And so he was even aware of like where the ingredients would and would not be, which was really nice.
That happened to me with the Hungarian goulash. And the chef from the app from Avalon came up and gave me his personal recipe for Hungarian goulash. And I had already bought the paste, and he goes, now make sure you have the paste and not the paprika powder. You want the paprika paste. And I had already, that was one of the things I was taking home for sure. But he did the same thing. He walked me through it and made sure, don't ever be afraid to ask. The worst that's going to happen is that they're going to say no. And I mean, I've got a couple of recipes that I've asked for over the years that they're still embarrassingly enough sitting in my cupboard, like that Bavarian cream cheesecake. I've never tried to make it because I can't find the cheese.
I don't think that's embarrassing. You can't.
I'll get it eventually.
But at the same time, there's some closure there too. You're like, well, I can't make it because I can't get the ingredients. So, and that makes the travel even more special. It's sort of like, I know I can't, like this paste, this paprika paste, I'm only going to be able to make this until I'm out of the paste. And then I either have to go back to Hungary.
Oh, darn.
Or I'm going to have to... or I'm going to have to find it somewhere. Yeah.
I'm rationing out my mustard right now. When Josh uses it on something stupid, I get mad. I'm like, no, stop it. That's the good mustard. Use the American mustard.
Use that gray poupon.
Here's the French's.
Use the French's on the pretzel. Don't use the good mustard.
The thing I've noticed also, I mean, of course, we've all been down to the Caribbean many, 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 many times. And the mangoes down there are just so fantastic. They're juicy and they're just melt in your mouth. And you buy a mango here and it's not quite ripe enough.
I'm going to tell you right now, the most amazing piece of fruit I've ever had, fruit anywhere, Caribbean's good. Don't eat the pineapple when you go to Tahiti. I know everybody's like, oh, the pineapple in Hawaii. No, if you have the pineapple in Tahiti, it'll ruin you for life.
My mom said the pineapples in Africa were better than Hawaii.
I don't know about that. I had them in Costa Rica, and that was the first pineapple I ever liked. So there you go. It could be different everywhere. But I will also say,
you just gotta go everywhere. Try all.
I am not a big fruit person, and I did have a lot of fruit when I was in Hawaii when I was like 16. And I have never had fruit again that compared to that of any of the fruits that I had when I was in Hawaii, except for the pineapple. I will say the pineapple in Costa Rica, but we literally picked the pineapple. They cut it with a machete and I ate it like right off the plant. So I don't, that's not fair. Like that's not a fair comparison.
Yeah, that's, you know, that's so fresh that you can't really.
Yeah, you can't really. It's like unlike anything else. Yeah.
So these places that you guys all just referenced, are these places where these fruits are kind of in season all the time? Because I'm trying to think of the best fruit I ever had. And the two things that really come to mind are like strawberries and peaches, but they have to be at the right, like the right week of the right month, you know, to like when they're just perfectly ripe.
So I guess for me, I don't know the season for pineapple in Hawaii or in Costa Rica, but both times I was there in June and it was season. So that, I mean, I wasn't.
My mom used to get them all the time in Africa when they were stationed there.
I mean, I guess if you're in a place where the climate is pretty much the same year round, I would think that the quality of the fruit would be like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, they go into the jungle and pull out, you know, papayas and pineapples and bananas.
Anything that's grown, we also have to take into context the soil quality. Mm-hmm. Because, Sandy, remember when we were in
Puerto Rico,
and everything was so good, and Puerto Rican food was so good, and we were like, oh my God, Puerto Rican food is so good. But the soil was like 100 years
of all. I don't know, but even like the ropa vieja and like the meat and stuff was so good.
Well,
and the mojitos.
And there's something, some of it is emotional, but some of it is also like, I will tell you, I've been to California many, many times, and even the Pacific Northwest, the food is extraordinary. And I will stand by this until the day I die. And it's not based in any science. It's just what I believe. The fact is California can grow almost anything.
Yeah.
And so it has not come far to get there. You know, the first time I tried salmon and liked it, I was in Portland, Oregon. And it was different. And I was like, oh, this is important. And now, even now, I will eat wild caught salmon, but I will not eat farm salmon, because growing up, that's probably what I was having was farm salmon, and I didn't like it. But I had that first wild salmon in Portland, and I was like, oh, this is what life is about. Avocados, didn't like them. Grew up in North Carolina. I probably never really had a good avocado. But as I got older and I got to travel and I got to have avocados when they were like where they were meant to be, you know, no wonder California puts them in everything, because they literally pull them out of their backyard and put them in stuff. I can't do that here.
That's like same oysters thing with fruits too. Like yes. Oysters are different depending on where you really different depending on where you get them
from. Oh yeah, they're oysters and mussels and all of those things. Like I'm another one. I grew up in landlocked Wisconsin. Like my idea of seafood was beer batter, deep fried walleye. And you know, all you can eat on Sundays.
And what is that really? What is that? let's not dwell on it too much.
Walleye is really good. I will still buy walleye is really good, especially when it's done right and it's got the best beer batter. It's really good. But not to knock it, lake fish isn't everything.
and most things are good deep fried. Just going to put that out there.
Deep fried. You could probably deep fry just about anything. But so moving out here, I had to adjust to eating seafood. And then I would run into situations of where, like, I had mussels for the first time, but they were Penn Cove mussels. And I didn't realize I was starting with, like, platinum. Yeah. Then I would travel and I would go places and have mussels and I'd be like, oh, this is not good. Don't start out with the...
So my biggest food regret, this would be a good podcast topic. My biggest food regret was I was in Italy when I was 15. And at that point, I thought mushrooms were disgusting. And so the family I was living with at the time for the summer, I was just with the summer, wanted to go out. They went out during the day and hiked and found fresh mushrooms. Mm. And that was for dinner that night. Well, I thought that was the worst idea I'd ever heard. I'm going to hike, physical exercise, and we're going to look for mushrooms, which are gross, digging around in the dirt. Like, there is nothing about this that's appealing. And so my 15-year-old self was like, I'm not doing that. And they said, fine, you can stay here, but you won't get to have any of the mushrooms at dinner. I was like, fine. And I actually remember sitting at dinner going, ha ha, I don't even care about those mushrooms. And to this day, as we're talking about this in this moment, I'm like, I bet those mushrooms were amazing.
They were probably the best mushrooms.
They were probably the best mushrooms. And I hate my 15-year-old self right now.
Oh, God. So I would have done the same thing at 15.
Yes, exactly. Like, but honestly, that was, and it is something that makes me try the weirdest things on vacation. The only thing that to date I have had the opportunity to try and haven't tried is that fast food weirdness in Amsterdam, where they have like these things in freezers and then you buy them and you can microwave them. And even Anthony Bourdain said they're incredibly good considering what they are. And I could not bring myself to do that. I don't have any regrets about that. I regret the mushrooms. I'm still okay with the whole Amsterdam fast food thing. But so, yeah.
George, do you have any travel food stories you'd like to share? Do you have any like something you've made at home or loved so much?
The only thing we have, and I wouldn't say I made it. I was more of the eater than the cooker. But I talked my wife into making tonga toast because that's one of both of our favorites every time we go to Disney World. So that's,
and how did she do? She doesn't listen to
She actually
podcast.
Did really well. I have somebody that works with me whose wife works in a bakery. So she whipped up a batch of sourdough bread because right now it's kind of hard to find weird things like that. So I got a whole loaf of sourdough bread uncut, so we were able to cut it nice and thick and fill it with the bananas, and yeah, it came out really good. It was just like being at Kona.
So awesome. After they released the authentic park recipe, or did you guys use like a duplicate recipe?
I think it was the park recipe.
I'm really impressed, and I apologize for all the show notes have all these Disney recipes, but you guys don't realize what a big thing this is for Disney. This year, they have released, since the pandemic started, they released the real recipe for the gray stuff, Tonga toast, the cheese soup from Canada, the churros, the churros. You can make the actual churros at home.
And wait, make them, and I will eat them, but they sound really difficult.
Wait, the gray stuff?
Yes. Yeah.
It's delicious. Don't believe me?
I don't
just ask the dishes.
This is a big thing because they were hoarding those recipes, and the only thing you could get online were these like duplicates that were kind of like, it was okay, but it wasn't quite the same. And this was a big thing for them to release them. So if anybody's listening, go to disneyparks.disney.go.com and look for the food. There's a whole food blog about all of the magical Disney recipes you can make at home.
Yeah, the cheddar cheese soup in Canada is actually like the world's most elusive thing, because I have no less than 3 recipes for that, not including this official one that came out, which I haven't tried because, frankly, I've been burned.
And well, I've got baggage. I've got Food and Wine
book for that. Have you made it?
It was like 10 years ago. So
was it as good?
I mean, I guess it was good. I don't remember.
It wasn't as good. You know, you would remember.
Again, I guess.
Yes. I don't want to say mine was as good. I've made this before I have 10 of, my name is Lindsay and I have a problem buying Epcot cookbooks. I have 10 of the Food and Wine Festival cookbooks in my house. I think this last visit was the first year I just like, no more, I'm not buying anymore. But I've made that, and I made this amazing potato and leek soup. But the problem, like we talked about, I think we kind of talked about the amount of soup you're making.
Yes,
is massive. You are taking this recipe, and I'm a household of 2 people. It's me and my husband. We froze so much of that soup. And I don't even think we couldn't even get through it all before it went bad, because you can only leave it in your freezer for so long. It was really good, but I love the Food and Wine recipes that come out, like the Kahlua porks. So this is on my list to make in the next couple weeks, is Kahlua pork sliders from Hawaii.
That sounds delicious. Yep.
And there's a recipe, I found a recipe for the Ghirardelli. Did you have the chocolate bacon bark? Did you ever try that?
No, but I think I should try it. Can you mail me some?
Yeah. And then the kielbasa and potato pierogies with sour cream, apple strudel, the Brazilian cheese puffs. And they took away my grilled lamb chop with mint pesto and potato crunchies. But while I was looking through all my recipe books, I realized I have a recipe for it. So I guess I could just make it. Now that
my kids absolutely love mom's meatloaf.
From the Primetime
Cafe. Yeah.
That's good meatloaf.
And they actually request it for their birthdays.
And so the recipe is accurate. You have a good, accurate recipe of it.
It is, but we've tweaked it a little. We double the magic ketchup. Because it never, there's never enough. And we adjusted, we actually kind of toned down the green peppers. Okay. But other than that, it's exactly the way they make it right there.
Well,
and it makes 3 of them.
And to Lindsay's point too, because these recipes, they've pulled them down because obviously they're making them for hundreds of people. But back to my 4-count shrimp, that recipe also calls for 1.5 pounds of fettuccine.
Whoa.
So you're feeding an army.
My 21-year-old self was like, well, what's the big deal? And my father was like, are you kidding me? That's like so much pasta. To me, I'm like, I don't know, 1.5 pounds of fettuccine, whatever. You know, I make 1 pound of ground beef. It's not that much, right?
No. It's just 1.5 pounds.
Yeah. And so their recipes are a little unrealistic, especially and to be fair, I did make that recipe once I found, because now I can, in North Carolina, now 20 years later, I can find 4-count shrimp with some searching, and it's not from North Carolina, I assure you, because we only have popcorn shrimp in North Carolina. We only have this itty bitty shrimp. But
that's not true. We have.
But you can. So I've made it, and it's delicious. But it literally could feed you for a week. And I'm an eater, and it could feed me for a week, no doubt, every meal.
So you have to make those when you want to share the magic.
Yes. With other people. I don't have any friends. So.
You could bring it over next time. I mean,
I don't know that I will ever make it again. It was a pain.
I ordered a Mickey-shaped cookie, like a deep cookie cutter, and I got it mailed the other day, but my I still don't have yeast, or I would have made Mickey beignets before this podcast. But so that was my goal last weekend, was to make Mickey beignets, and it didn't happen yet. So it's going to happen next weekend, as soon as I get yeast. But I want to make the Mickey beignets, and then I want to make the ones from Café du Monde and compare. Mm-hmm. Like a taste.
They're really easy to make. And they don't take long to cook.
I actually need to do that too. I need a good recipe. Somebody send me the recipe, because I bought so much yeast to make those pretzels the other day. And so I need things to make.
See, we don't even make pretzels. We get them from the Milwaukee Pretzel Ooh. Company and have them shipped.
So I was looking for something to do with the kids. So Marcus and I made pretzels, and they were delicious. But I do like your plan better. But now I have like literally 3/4 of a pound of yeast to do something with. So. Beignets are high on my list. Lindsay, send me a recipe.
I will. It's Disney. It's the official Disney recipe that they released.
All right.
And then I'm ordering the, you can order the Café du Monde pre-mix in the box off of Amazon. And you can actually either get it with the chicory coffee or without.
I have actually seen
it. And sometimes I found it in the grocery store.
That's another good example of things you can eat on, you know, at home, that, you know, making those beignets. And a lot of places have mixes where you can do it. The Tonka toast is a new phenomenon that you could really, I mean, you could try to emulate it before, but they had not really released a recipe. So having that recipe now is,
I think magical. I might make that for Josh this weekend. He really loves that, I forget what it's called now, but it's got like the pancake and the egg and the rice with the pulled pork hash. The Samoa.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, so good.
So I'm curious about the, can we go back to the cheddar cheese soup? Because I literally have 3 recipes for it. All of them are different. None of them have ended up tasting like the cheddar cheese soup that I've had. Has anybody tried this official one that's come out that, I mean, the ones I have are official, incidentally, they're in Walt Disney World cookbooks, but obviously they are a lie. Because it's not my cooking skills, clearly.
I looked at this official one. I made this, I think it was last winter or the winter before. Oh, see, so here's the thing. I think this is going to come down to the quality of the white cheddar cheese that you use.
Okay, I believe that.
You need to have some good, you need to get some cheese, either Canadian cheese, or I hate to say this, I'm going to plug Wisconsin cheese, but I am. You need to get some cheese from cows who have seen a winter. Because they're going to have that fat layer that the flavor is going to be, so you're going to want, you can't make this with some anorexic California cow white.
Those vegetarian cows and
those vegetarian cows that no fat and
usually
no,
usually the best cheddars I can get here are either Boar's Head, which I'm not really counting, or Tillamook is usually like my high-end cheddar here, unless I can.
Yeah, Tillamook is good stuff.
So maybe, but that's the thing. It's usually when I'm doing something that is cheddar cheese based, I would buy a good cheddar. It's been a while since I've made it because honestly, I was really upset that it didn't come out nearly as well as I thought it would. And so I have anger issues.
I'm looking at this. If you use good bacon, doesn't really matter the quality.
What is good bacon?
Butter.
Bacon is good.
I've had bad bacon. You know what good bacon is. Good bacon's not the cheap bacon. You want the
So I always have good bacon because bacon is delicious.
What about going to like the farmer's market and getting cheese there? Where it, I mean, like, because that would be the freshest cheese.
But our cheese is not, our cheddar is not. I mean, if you're getting goat cheese here, that would be good. But we don't do cheddar in North Carolina. I mean, we can even do some like.
So if you want good cheddar, you got to get it from England.
England or Ireland or frankly, Wisconsin.
Here's your make or break it. What kind of Canadian golden lager or pale lager style beer are you using? I'd use a good one.
I would always use a good one.
Don't be using Bud Light or
Michelob Ultra.
Don't be borrowing a Michelob Ultra from Sandy for this
recipe. I have a tap in my kitchen that runs water, so I'm good there. I would have real beer.
I think those are the things that I would use: good bacon, use a good cheese, and use a good beer. And you can't mess this up.
I may try it again, even though it's like 800 degrees here in North Carolina. I think I'm going to try the cheddar cheese soup from Canada one more time.
I will risk quarantine and come over and taste it. No. We can socially distance. Here. What?
I don't want your germs here.
Socially distance.
You can... No, we'll just put a bowl on your front porch and you fill it and put a Tupperware over it and then
actually, if it's good and I'm proud of it, I will gladly share it. So, and knowing it's a Disney recipe, it'll make enough for like 800 people.
You'll have a whole cauldron full.
Yeah. And I don't have any friends, so it'll be me and Sandy.
Some more, please.
So one of the things I'm excited to try to make that I haven't tried to make yet, I did watch, so I should give a shout out to my friend Julie Budd, who I know is probably one of our three listeners.
Hey, Julie.
Hey, Julie. She has been making Disney replica recipes at home for like at least 30 years, because her kids, well, 20 some years, her kids will only eat, like they love the Tony's spaghetti.
Wow.
No, but she makes like these intricate, she made the other day and posted, she made the pretzel bread from Le Cellier. And I wanted to climb through my Facebook screen and eat her pretzel bread because it actually looked delicious. So that's the one thing I think when I make the soup this time, I'm going to try and make the pretzel bread because I think that's going to make a world of difference with it.
And you have leftover yeast, or you will. Yeah.
And I will have, once I get yeast, I'll have leftover. I've been a little stingy. I'm sorry about those price gougers on Amazon. I could not bring myself to pay $20 for 2 pounds of yeast.
Oh, well, I got mine for like $6 for a pound. So I must have hit it at the right time.
Yeah. No, it was crazy.
Yeah. Although I don't bake. So even in this time, and that's the thing too, for some reason, even though as travel agents, we have no income coming in, I'm still working 40 hours a week. What's up with that?
The one thing I was craving the other day really bad was Casey's chili cheese dogs. Mm. And I don't have a really good recipe for the chili. So if you guys come across one, let me know.
Mine. Yes, online. Order Skyline Chili from Ohio, from Cincinnati. Yes. No. Yes.
Chris loves that.
Yes.
He goes up there on business trips. He always
goes. So Donna, what do you think she needs to order?
She needs to ask me very nicely for my chili recipe.
You know I love you. I was eating Hormel, Donna.
Oh no, 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 no,
no, no, no, no, no.
With cheddar, and I couldn't put enough cheese on it. I had a good hot dog too. I had a Nathan's, I had one of the giant plump Nathan's, the big ones, and I could not put enough cheese on it to make that Hormel taste good.
But really, that Skyline chili that's one of those travel things, like Sandy was saying. Chris knows.
From Cincinnati. There,
yeah, from Cincinnati. It's really good. And even if you haven't been to Cincinnati, I think you would appreciate the chili.
Okay.
I think you would. And then you could compare it to Donna's and you can report back to us. And we
Chris,
Donna.
Chris eats it on spaghetti in Cincinnati.
Ooh.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. They eat it on everything in Cincinnati. They put on their coffee.
Coffee. We're gonna get our first hate mail letter.
If I remember right, it has coffee in it.
I think you're actually right. I don't know for sure.
It has coffee in the chili.
I think you're right.
Coffee and the chili. Okay.
Yeah.
That makes more sense than having chili inside your coffee.
But I'm just saying they do put on everything in Cincinnati. And I don't know anybody in Cincinnati who would argue with me. I mean, maybe I'm being a little, you know, hyperbolic, but it is absolutely true. So.
Well, that's our show for this week. Thanks for hanging out with us. We would love for you to share your life-changing travel moments with us on our Facebook page. You can find us on Facebook as Flyaway or from the podcast page on OutlanderTravel.com. Please be sure to subscribe to us and leave a review wherever you get your podcasts. We'd love to hear from you. On behalf of Donna, Sandy, Lindsay, Elizabeth, and myself, George, thanks for joining us this week. Gotta fly.